We're doing Pirkei Avot with Rabbeinu Yonah, and we had learned the Mishnah that Avraham Avinu had 10 tests, and this shows us his great love. Rabbeinu Yonah had explained that the idea of Lech Lecha, that Hashem gave Avraham Avinu the land of Israel, is a direct product of what we learn at the end of the previous parsha, at the end of Noach, that Avram left Ur Kasdim. And that, said Rabbeinu Yonah, is the allusion to Avram's test of the furnace. When it describes Avram went out of the fire of Kasdim, so there wasn't really a place named the fire of Kasdim, but rather the Torah was hinting to us this whole story about how the Kasdim had this furnace, and they said, if you don't bow to our idol, you'll get thrown in. And Avram did not bow to the idol. So Rabbeinu Yonah had said, just as in the end of Bereshit, at the end of Parshat Bereshit, the Torah describes Noach matzachin b'nei Hashem, and then it tells you, well, look, because he was such a good person that Hashem liked him, so Hashem saved him from the flood. By the same token, at the end of Parshat Noach, the Torah tells you, Avraham Avinu stood up to this test of Ur Kasdim, and look, he was such a good person, Hashem gave him this mitzvah of going to the land of Israel. We raised the issue that this is a very big chidush, the idea that Hashem's love for Avraham was a product of a specific action. The second test, that was last week, Vasheni. The second test Avram had was Shetzivahu Latzet Me'atzo. Hashem commanded him to leave his land. The pasuk says, Lech Lecha Me'altzecha U'molatecha V'asaken. Hashem told him, leave your country, leave the place you were born, and Avram did that. So that that's the second test. Vashlishi. The third test, it says, "Vayidra av ma'aretz." There was a famine in the land. Hashem told him, "Everyone will find blessing in you. Things are going to go so well for you." Hashem promised him before he went to Israel, and he shows up to Israel, and there's a famine. This is not what he expected. At 75 years old, he finally gets a vision from Hashem, he gets a promise from Hashem, he comes to Israel and there's a famine and Hashem doesn't say a word. So how am I supposed to deal with that? When Hashem brought a famine to earth, Avraham Avinu did not question, well, why is Hashem doing this? So he didn't know why Hashem was doing it. And he says, I'm going to live in Hashem's world and work with the system Hashem gives me, even though I don't have answers. So that's the third test. We have this false belief. If I do what's right, everything will work out right. But no, maybe if you do what's right, then Hashem will give you a test to deal with things not working out so well. Who said it's going to be pleasant? Tanakh is filled with people doing what's right, and then being given another opportunity to stand up to another test. The fourth test, Lekichat Sadeh Leparo. Lekichat Sara leParo. If things weren't bad enough, his wife is abducted by Pharaoh. And again, Hashem doesn't tell him, don't worry, Avram, everything's going to be all right. She's going to come back home safe and sound. No. Avram's supposed to deal with that. And he does. HaChamishi, the fifth test. Milchemet Arba Melachim. The war with the four kings. SheB'Shloshmotu'Shmonasari SheChziku V'Tach V'Kadosh Baruch Hu. He had only 318 men. And he retained his faith in Hashem, and he went to that war. Rabbeinu Yonah doesn't explain. It seems to me that Rabbeinu Yonah is going with the Midrash that says that the war between the four kings and five kings was a prelude to a war with Avram. When you read the pasuk, it says, "Vayishma Avram ki nishba achiv." Avram heard that his brother Lot was captured. "Vayarek et chanichav yeridei veito." So he quickly put together his army, his 318 men, and he went after them. "Vayodofa achrehem," he chased after them. "Vayichalek aleim laila," he's chasing them. Chazal tell us, according to one medrash, Avram knew that the war of the four kings against the five was a prelude to war against Avram. Their next stop was to come and attack Avram. So Avram preempted them. He attacked them. That would fit with what Rabbeinu Yonah is describing.
But if he won the war against four out of the five with tremendous crazy numbers, then why was he afraid? Why do you mean, what was the need to preempt them?
So Rabbeinu Yonah says, "V'nasalones." It was a miracle that he came out alive. The victory was not a natural victory.
But it wouldn't make a difference if they didn't hurt as well.
So again, Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that Hashem didn't tell him it would work out right. He went to war, so the Medrash says, "La'rog la'reg." He said, "I will kill or be killed." So then you ask yourself, then why don't you run? And the answer, it seems, that Rabbeinu Yonah is working with the understanding that Avram didn't have much of a choice. To run would mean to lose everything. So his choice was to be chased by these four kings or to fight them. So he chose to fight them. And Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Nasalones." A miracle happened on his behalf that he won.
Everything that Avram did, you say, is prelude, you know, his sacrifice between the Ayin Beit El and hard to receive. Do we say that this is a prelude to Gog and Magog?
I think there's such a medrash in the Medrash Rambam on this. I think so.
Everybody else is asking about that. There's a place for it, but when you mention the test of Paro, you know, he had to think fast on his wits, and I think he said, "She's my sister," and it seems he would have been killed had he not said that. But to turn your wife over to sure, right? I mean, it wasn't taken with her just for, you know, for nothing. It's questionable, isn't it?
So Machlokas Rishonim, whether he did right in that or not. And Rav Feinstein doesn't like the quote that says Avram made a mistake there, because he says, if you don't have it in the Gemara, then we shouldn't invent it.
Right. But if it's not a mistake, we have to learn how it's not.
I guess
it's
case.
It would make
sense.
How did he know that she wouldn't be violated?
He didn't.
It would make sense.
And if he's willing to take the chance of being violated rather than maybe being killed himself, or look like pretty certainly.
So that's for Thursday night, but you could ask the same question about Mordechai, who allowed Esther to be taken.
Mordechai, you could say she was taken kind of by force. She didn't just come and say, "Hey, check out my..."
He didn't either. Chazal say...
it
says
his sister, but Mordechai didn't say...
No.
Say she's my niece.
Two steps. The lashon of the pasuk is, forgetting the beginning of the pasuk. It says that they saw her, and they said, "Oh, she's fit for a king." So our sages say, why does it say they saw her? So it says, initially when they came in, they hid her in a box. Avram wasn't walking around saying, "Here, take a look at my sister." On the contrary, Avram hid her in a box. And then they told him, "What's in the box?" He said, "Doesn't matter." They said, "No, we're going to charge you taxes, importing something." So he said, "Okay." They'll say, "We'll charge you taxes for wheat." He said, "Fine." They said, "Okay, if you're willing to pay for wheat." You know the Medrash, yeah? So they said, "Then we're going to charge you taxes as though you're bringing in silver." So he said, "Okay." So they said, "Okay, then we'll charge you taxes as gold." So he says, "Fine." So they kept upping the ante until finally they said, "If you're willing to pay all that, we got to see what's inside." So they forced open the box, and then they saw Sarah, and they said, "Oh, she's fit for a king." And then everything else came into play. So I'm just saying, it's not that Avram was taking this as his first choice. It was his last choice.
Okay. No, just if you have the other example that seemed clear, it was heroic, and here it was a little ambivalent, and that wasn't sure.
The greatness of Avram was not turning on his faith when this happened to him. The greatness wasn't in giving up Sarah. He didn't have too much of a choice. It was either give up Sarah and stay alive, or give up Sarah and be dead. But it wasn't. There wasn't any other option at this point.
If you gave up, even if you decided, if you chose death, she would still be by.
Right. So, that's what I'm saying. That wouldn't have accomplished anything.
So it would seem that it has to be that a person's resolve to believe in Hashem is not. It doesn't make a difference about the person's personality. It's more about the his resolve. Meaning, it's a free choice. It's a free will thing. It's not something which is dependent on a person. Like a person is a very stubborn person, right? You would think that it would be easier for him to stay true to and even when bad things happen, to stay true to the path. But it seems from what you're saying that it's not the case, and it doesn't make a difference how stubborn a person is. It's really more. It's very free will.
I would add. I see you guys are focused on this point, so. In the world, we see fakers and liars. There are people out there who get all kinds of honors for being wonderful people. And then you find out that at home, the guy beat his wife.
Hitler won bad
here. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Our principle is that a person is first tested at home. Tested at home doesn't mean that it's easy at home. There were great rabbis whose wives made their lives miserable. The Talmud tells us fantastic stories. Bruria is not an example of that because she didn't mean to make Rabbi Meir's life miserable. She was very smart and there were fireworks, ultimately her untimely death. But she wasn't trying to make his life miserable. You have Rav, you have Rav Chia, you have rabbis where it says... Their life was more miserable than death. Their wives were capable of. That's what it says. It says when he'd learn the pasuk, he'd say, "Yep." The pasuk says, "I find the woman more bitter than death," and he'd be like, "Yep." So not all rabbis had it so miserable, but there were definitely plenty who did, and yet they treated their wives well. Meaning the Talmud tells us the rabbi who's, when he'd ask his wife, she'd say, "What do you want for dinner?" He'd say, "White beans." So she'd make him red beans. He'd say, "Red beans." She'd say, "White beans." So we'd think, "Trick her. Tell her red. She'll make you white." No. He continued being honest with her. There's something, he kept trying to honestly love her. The Talmud says wherever he'd go, he'd bring her gifts. He tried. And it didn't work. She was intent on making his life miserable. And he kept trying. He kept trying. And he spoke about her virtues. He recognized she was making his life miserable. And he said, "There's nothing better than the wife you marry when you're young." They asked him, "Why don't you get divorced?" He said, "This is the wife I married when I was young. It doesn't get better than that. There's special things about this." And he saw the positive in it, and he stuck to it. So we have different stories in Talmud like that. At the end of the day, we see that great people work very hard to love their wives, and even if they don't get that reciprocated, and it's real, meaning as we see from their conversations, that they valued their wives, they loved their wives, it wasn't a game. Meaning, we look at this in our marriage classes, and we think, I'll be nice to her, she'll be nice to me, I'll be nice to her, I'll get a better marriage. By then, they were wonderful people, who saw the good in the other person, and they, because they were kind and loving people, they were kind and loving to their wives, even though they kept getting a miserable life in return. But they kept it up, and we have phenomenal stories, including Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon's wife, who was upset at him for not taking the care he should have taken care of himself, so she left him ill. She said, "Forget it, you're not taking your medication, goodbye, I'm leaving," left him to die, went to her father's house. Okay, I'm exaggerating the story a little bit. She didn't leave him to die, but she did leave him to take care of himself after she decided he should have taken better care of himself. Okay, imagine, a wife tells her husband, "You're not watching your cholesterol, I'm leaving your heart condition, you manage, goodbye, I'm leaving." We have amazing stories, and on the contrary, what we find is that the husbands kept loving their wives. Avraham Avinu, when we read about his kindness to humanity, his care for humanity, that all of civilization appoints him as the king, so we have to infer that his love for Sarah was greater than what we can imagine. His care for Sarah was greater than what we can imagine. So now Avraham Avinu has a test. What's he going to do when he has a choice? His wife's going to be abducted, either with him alive or him dead. And then when she's abducted, how's he going to speak to the Ribbono Shalom? So the Medrash says he didn't stop davening. He kept saying, Ribbono Shalom, I need you. There's nothing I can do here. The forces are bigger than me. So when it was Lot, he goes to war. When his nephew was abducted and he realizes the war is hitting his camp, it's only a matter of time, they're headed his way. So he says, okay, if I'm forced to war, I'll go to war. I have no choice. Either I'll live or I'll die, but at least I'll have the advantage of being on the attack. I might win. And he does. It says it was a miracle, but he does. With Sarah, he doesn't have that option. And now, Avraham is silent. I think we have to see the greatness here in terms of, imagine a person who is so loving of humanity. He has a much greater love for his wife. And now he has to deal with the test. And specifically here, we have to notice how the tests will predominantly revolve around Ben Adam L'Chaveru. Meaning Avram's tests, if we pay attention, so the first test was, can he give up his own life? The second test is to leave his family. That's already Ben Adam L'Chaveru, he has an aging father. So he takes his orphan nephew along, he marries his orphan niece, but he ultimately leaves his father. He leaves his father before his father dies. He leaves his father as a very old man, and he leaves him for years. And then the third test is his faith in Hashem, but the fourth test is dealing with Sarah. The fifth test is going to war to save his nephew. So he saves his brother and all the wealth of Sodom and Amorah. And Avraham Avinu is willing to put up with all these things that happened to him, and ultimately it's to his benefit. But he doesn't know that at the time. At the time, all he sees are the hardships. Life is not fun. Every minute he has to deal with something else. Hashishi ben 99 shana. He's 99 years old. He wants a child. Hashem tells him, "You will have a child. Now just go and slice off your male organ." At 99 years old, that's a very dangerous operation. I mean, when a person's an adult, so in their days, I don't know how they stopped the bleeding. Chazal say, in fact, that Avram bled for 3 days. 3 days after the circumcision, he's still bleeding.
That's a little right?
I'm not aware of that.
When he ran to go to the angels, that the stitches broke off.
Who argues with that? It's mentioned in one Medrash. Who argues with it?
Saying the thing that caused the bleeding to restart meant that it stopped.
If he bled 3 days straight, he'd be dead. Saying that it can't be that he bled 3 days straight. But 3 days later, as he moved, it bled, which makes sense. I'm saying on a male organ, there are bigger veins that have to close, and every little movement can cause the bleed. Even on a child, we see that sometimes as the child moves his legs, he can start bleeding again inside the diaper. That's one of the reasons we leave a bandage on for a day or two, to protect it. But with an adult, it's much more difficult. The bandage won't do the trick. Hashvi'i likach Sarah l'Avimelech. You think you're done. You've been through it all. And suddenly his wife is abducted a second time. And this is another theme in Tanakh that someone I heard in a Dvar Torah, a very nice idea from Nechama Leibowitz, that you will notice in Tanakh that the tests repeat themselves. You think you're done? Now you have to face the same test again. As though that's another test in life. Hashmini, the eighth test, Shegiresh Agav Yishmael Bino. Notice again, the Ben Adam L'Chaveru. His tests are there. He has to chase away Hagar, his son Yishmael. And Hashem told him to do that. B'mitzvat Hashem, v'imera adavar aludot bino, ki yemitzvato. And even though the Torah tells us, Avram felt very bad. Vayera b'inei Avraham. It was bad in the eyes of Avram. The Pasuk is revealing to you, Avram wasn't fond of this. God told him to do it, and it didn't make sense to Avram. Avram thought, that's my son. So Sarah says he's a bad influence on Yitzchak, but that's my son. In Avraham's eyes, it was bad. And we see how right Avraham was. Because in heaven, when Yishmael is dying of thirst, Hashem asks, is he a tzaddik now or not? And the angels say, yeah, he's a tzaddik. So Avraham was right. Avraham saw the good in Yishmael. You see, in heaven, that good stood out. Yishmael merits a miracle, an angel coming down and saying, there's the water for you. Ah, but Sarah was also right. Right? Sarah was right. Hashem says, listen to Sarah. Avraham was right. Yes, only in Judaism, right? You guys know the joke. You guys know the story? Two guys walk into a rabbi. This one says, I found a wallet. This one says, I lost a wallet. This one says, that's my wallet. Give it back to me. He says, but you said you had $100 in your wallet. This has only $70 in the wallet. So the rabbi says, give him back the wallet. So the man says, but Rabbi, he says he lost his wallet. Should it be his? He says, you're right. That's why I said give it back. The next guy says, but Rabbi, how could you say give it back? He says there was $100,000 in his wallet. There are only $70 in the wallet. He says, you're right. So third guy says, Rabbi, how can you say they're both right? That's contradiction. So the rabbi says, you're also right. So that's what we find in Judaism. Avram's right and Sarah's right. And we see backing for both opinions. And then we have to see how it works itself out. So when he's told to chase away Hagar, the Torah tells us it was bad in the eyes of Avram, and he does it. Means it's not always right in our eyes to do mitzvah. Sometimes we come to a mitzvah and it's tough as nails, and you tell yourself, that doesn't jive with me. That doesn't feel right. It's my mitzvah, okay, I'm going to do it. But it doesn't feel right. It doesn't always feel right to do a mitzvah. And that's, it seems, Rabbein Yon over here is revealing to us a very important insight. When the Torah says, Vayera davar b'nei Avraham al odot b'no, the Torah is telling you, he saw it bad. Yeah?
Think about it. Obviously, Avraham buried his test way beyond anything. You know, we buried it if it happened. But the idea that he absolutely had hard evidence from miracles that he knew that it was from Hashem, does that make a difference? Like Eon at the end didn't say, then no more questions once he knew it was Hashem speaking of it, meaning he liked it. So to compare the test that someone today has to do a mitzvah or not, certain things, I don't know if it's the same analogy as with Abraham. On the one hand, it could be harder for Abraham, but on the other hand, I don't think he had any doubt at all that that's what Hashem wanted him to do. I don't think, even though he himself said, how could that be?
Okay, let's see the psukim. And then I think we'll see an answer, okay? We have a chumash here. The Torah describes Batere Sarah saw at Ben Agara Mitzrit Mitzachik. She saw him doing something inappropriate with Yitzchak. And she tells Avram, she tells him, Garesh amazot ve'et bena, chase away this maid and her son. Ki lo yirash bena amazot im b'ni Yitzchak. I don't want this maid son to inherit with my son Yitzchak. Vayera davar meod b'ne Avraham. This was very bad in the eyes of Avram. Alodot beno, about his son. So the Torah tells us, Sarah says something. Avram views it one way. She says, Ben Amma, and he sees it badly as his son. Hashem tells Avram, Al yeira beinecha. Don't let it seem bad in your eyes about the lad and your maid. Whatever Sarah says, listen to her, because in Yitzchak will be your seed. And I will take care of that son and the maid. Notice Hashem sides with Sarah, not your son, the son of the maid, because at the end of the day, he is your seed. What does the next pasuk say? Avram gets up bright and early in the morning. He takes bread. He takes a flask of water. He gives it to Hagar. He gives her the child, not his son. Sends her off into the desert. So there seems to be a stress here. Hashem doesn't only tell him, send her off. Hashem says, Al yira beinecha al anar v'al amatecha. Don't let it seem bad in your eyes. Send away his son. Send away his wife. Al yira beinecha. And the pasuk tells us, Vayeshkim Avram baboker. Avram got up early in the morning. He says, Hashem told me that right away I'm going to do it. I think a major component in Avram's test is his attitude. And to tell a person who is the master of kindness, who takes in every stranger off the street and says, come, you can eat in my house, send away your son. That's, again, going back to our principle that by Avram, it wasn't about showing everyone he's kind. It was because this was the person he worked on himself to be. So then it was very, very hard to do this. And al yera beinecha. Hashem says, don't let it be bad in your eyes. It's one thing to say, I'm going to do it, right? The next morning, get up bright and early.
But what I can't relate to, I don't understand, is, you know, the fact that Hashem has that kind of relationship with you and contact with you, how that changes things. Like, if God forbid a scenario where, you know, I had a 14-year-old daughter who, God forbid, was almost raped by a group leader in a youth group and became pregnant. I would say, if Hashem told me, no matter what, if she can't deal with it, don't get an abortion. Okay. I'll trust in Hashem and I won't do it. But if I don't have that, and I can do it quietly, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, and that's the difference, kind of. I don't know. It's crazy, because it's sounding like Hashem, Abraham has less of a test than I do, which is insane. Merited this greatness because he passed more and more tests. Before he was 75, there was no response from Hashem. I'm taking that away. But once we're at that level, there's a variable that I can't relate to.
So what you're asking is, how does a person retain b'chira chofshit after they have prophecy? That's the essence of your question.
Yes.
Okay?
I mean, they must have different tests, different challenges, a different world. They're living on a different level that it's hard to really relate to once somebody has had direct contact with Hashem. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu even looked different at a certain point. So can we learn the same lessons at that stage as we could before? Does it register? Maybe it's with me, it's hard to register. You know,
like, deserves a long answer. I would make your question a little bit sharper. What you said in the beginning is what makes this a very powerful question. You pointed out that Eov says, once you spoke to me, I can live with my questions. So then the question becomes, how does every prophet retain free will? If what Eov is saying is, once you spoke to me, I can live with my questions, so then doesn't that change the way we view every prophet? That I'm saying the essence of your question is really emanating from Eov, and it deserves a...
It's an answer. I don't understand it. I mean, we know Bill had that prophecy, and he had no problem.
Right.
You know, he still had his human titus.
Right.
I mean, you have Habakkuk. Balei tzaddik, balei rasha tzaddik
imenu. Right. He's answering you. A good answer.
Right.
He's saying, you see, a prophet can look at the world and say, God, I don't understand how you're running it.
Right.
Well, Thursday night. Okay.
No more questions. They understand. Matter of fact, shortly after they were quenched again. But they say at that point they had the highest, right? Higher than the lowest handbag layer, higher than the. So when you know it happens, it's just how it happens. What's the mindset going on?
Okay. Yeah.